you're listening to Big Blend Radio's Lost Angel Travel Adventures Show with Linda Ballou, travel writer and author, and your host, Lisa Smith. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Big Blend Radio's Lost Angel Travel Adventures with Linda Ballou. I do want to tell you today's show is also going to be airing on a couple other of our networks, of course on Big Blend Radio, but also on our brand new Women Making History podcast, as well as our Way Back When history podcast, because, you know, we're going to be talking about two very significant women in history. And Linda Ballou has written about both of them with two of her novels. She is very attracted to women that have done things, attracted them to write about them, I should make sure I say. So, Linda, I'm excited because we get to talk about Wainani, your book, Wainani, A Voice from Old Hawaii, and also to talk about Embrace of the Wild, which is about Isabella Bird, again on the show. So how are you? And happy Women's History Month.
Oh, hi, Lisa. Thank you so much. I'm great. It's fabulously beautiful here. I have to say, I feel very fortunate. And when I see the news.
Yeah. Well, you're in Lost Angel Paradise.
I really am today.
In Los Angeles, and it's beautiful and sunny, and we're a little rainy in Texas as we record this. But I'm excited because Wainani, I know I read the novel, I'm thinking a few years back now. About maybe 4 years ago?
It was the first book that I published, and actually the first edition came out in 2009. And since subsequently I have updated a little bit, but mostly it's exactly the same story, but with a new cover, beautiful new cover that I absolutely adore. I was drawn to Kaahumanu. Who was the favorite wife of Kamehameha the Great. And he, of course, was the warrior who united the Hawaiian Islands. But she was the most powerful woman in old Hawaii, even though she was a childless bride. And that's what really drew me to her, because she was such a powerful and intelligent woman. And in history, usually women are only important because who they gave birth to. But she was important because she was a leader, and she was considered to be the mother of the people, and adored and loved by all. Not all.
Because there's some that were against her, weren't there?
Yes, because in the end, at the end of her reign, as when he died, when Kamehameha passed, he gave to her the power of his son and made her Kahina Nui and equal weight with his son, which was highly irregular. But his son drank a bit, and he didn't trust his son to rule without Kahumanu's influence. It's a complicated story. It's a beautiful story. It's the Hawaiian story from his birth. He was prophesied. There was the meteor across the sky when he was born, kind of like when Jesus was born. You know, there was a star in the sky, and the warrior was born that was destined to unite the Hawaiian Islands. And this was the prophecy that he was given at birth. And he lived up to it. So the story, the Hawaiian story, is so powerful on so many levels. But Wainani is told from Kahumanu's point of view. And let's say Wainani from now on. And let me just say this about it. The reason I changed the names from Kaahumanu to Wainani, which means beautiful waters, and Kamehameha to Makaha, which means savage, because I wanted Western readers to be able to engage in the story. And the Hawaiian words have, you know, so many K's in them, and there are, you know, so many similarities, and it's very difficult for Western people to follow the story. So I tried to make it easier for Western readers, but I read all of the oldest chronicles. I talked to many elders. I tried to get the story straight. But when you have a verbal, you don't have a written history, and everything is handed down through legend, genealogy, and so forth. There's more than one interpretation of the history, which is set from 1750 to 1819 in this case. So he had, I believe, 32 wives.
Wow.
And about 100 children. But she was his companion. And he would, you know, take him with him as they toured through the islands collecting taxes.
giving
talks and collecting taxes, right? But
it sounds like a politician to me.
Yeah. Well, she helped him, you know, deal with the political situations in the islands. The islands were warring. They had been warring, you know, for many years. And this was the idea that Kamehameha was the one who was going to unite the Hawaiian Islands. So at any rate, she was very strong. She was athletic. I won't think she was necessarily a striking beauty, but she had tremendous intellect. And he and she would surf together. The royals would be seen out on the
waves. And her and dolphins, right, in your book.
Well, in my book, she's a water baby, like all Hawaiians is a water baby. I have a little bit of magical realism in my story. I talk story like the Hawaiians talk story. And I have given her a dolphin friend, a dolphin family friend, in fact, you know, and she calls to them and swims with them often. And she finds sustenance and solace in the sea. She, you know, because she's a little bit different because she's childless. She wanted to have Kamehameha's child and, you know, continue the ruling line. But he had to marry the sacred bride and have an heir through that woman. But she and that woman became friends enough to raise the child together. It was a complicated affair.
Well, it's interesting because I know even in your book, how you even talked how, you know, you've always got a little romanticism in your book, a little bit of naughtiness, a little romantic, you know, romance is good. We always need that. What I really appreciated, you show her as a woman very connected to the water. Like you said, she was a water baby, her athleticism, which is often not looked upon. And both her and Isabella Bird, who we're going to talk about, Isabella also went to the Sandwich Islands. It was in Hawaii, but they were both athletic, and especially Isabella was, you wouldn't think would become athletic. But I want to go back to Wainani because she really was this athletic person, and then not being able to give birth was a big deal. In your book, you talk about, and I remember this pretty clearly, of, you know, them wanting her to drink different things and do different things so that she would have a child, and it wasn't happening. And so the women were kind of looking at her like, you know, what are you? You know, that was kind of a thing amongst the women about her not giving birth.
Well, she had experienced a certain amount of depression over this, but one of the things about my characters, all my characters find strength and solace and sustenance in nature. And at one point she goes out into the ocean and she literally sinks to the bottom and feels the ocean voices and the energy. And that allows her to go through this very difficult time. And, you know, she comes out stronger than ever. And as for the naughtiness, they were a sexually liberated society. So they had what they called love games, where you would sit in a circle, the men and the women would sit in a circle, and they had like coconut shells, and they had a fob. And they would toss their fob over to the coconut shell of the individual that they would like to go with that night.
Oh, so they were in the bottle.
Yeah, kind of like that, you know. So yeah, they were very liberated in that way, you know, and there was no shame in it. And so he had many wives, and she had many lovers until She got involved with a warrior named Kiane, who was a rival of Kamehameha in terms of being a leader and of the warriors. And so he assigned a dwarf to be with her at all times, so that if she, if she was with anyone, the dwarf was to come back and tell him. And if the dwarf didn't do that, the dwarf was going to be dead. So, the dwarf kept a good look, kept a good eye on her. And the dwarf was like kind of a little family joke. She kept around. I mean, it's a really interesting story. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And without, it was a women were not it was a different time for women. They weren't allowed to eat certain things, and they weren't allowed to eat certain red bananas, I believe it was, and pork. And they had separate eating houses. And Wainani didn't like any of that. She wanted unification. She wanted women to be have an equal standing. She wanted women to be, and they did go to war with the warriors, and in many ways they were equal, but they were restricted in certain activities. And so she was very brave in that way. She defied the traditions, and she defied the priests. And in the end, what she did, which is so controversial in even today, is she ended the 2,000-year-old kapu system, which called for very harsh punishments for breaking of any of the rules. Like if you walked in the shadow of a chief, you could be clubbed to death by the priests. And of course, if you were, a woman who broke the rules, but they usually they did do human sacrifice, but they you did not normally. Women and children were not sacrificed. Usually it was a captured warrior or someone who had broken a kapu. So it was a pretty rough and tough system. It did call for human sacrifice, and there was plenty of it. And she put an end to that in 1819, 1 year before the missionaries came. So the culture, there was a void
Well, the
there.
missionaries were lucky.
Yes, there was a void. Yeah, they'd given up on human sacrifice. Yes, it was looking they, but there was a religious void there because it had just the kapu system had just ended, and the burning of the gods had just taken place. So when the missionaries landed, there was a vacuum, and Kahahumanu took on the Christian religion. And for that, she's hated by many people even today.
That's
Because,
right. Yeah. That's Hey, it is, but that's part of history. It's also going, so she's kind of like keeping their roots, but also breaking tradition at the same time, which is very, it's not always understood, when that happens at that time.
So for some people, she's the loving mother of the people because the people were being heavily taxed. They had these really very ferocious kapu system was very fierce. You either obeyed the rules or died. Or they did have what they called places of refuge, and there's one remaining on the big island that's really quite important, and the bones of chiefs are there, and it really is worth visiting if you have an opportunity. But it was kind of like an ollie ollie oxen free kind of a situation where if you were a kapu breaker, you could get inside the walls of the place of refuge, and the priest there would allow you to stay. If you did enough penance, you could possibly go back into society in the fullness of time. So there was some leniency there, but generally it was quite harsh. It was really
So
quite harsh.
one thing you did is, she was born on St. Patty's Day.
Yes, true. That's
But you did a blog about her, and everyone in the show notes, we've got a link to Linda's blog to just give you kind of an overview of her history. Also, I have a link going to our original interview about Wainani when I just read the book, and also a link to a recent interview about Isabella Bird. In fact, we've done what, three interviews on Isabella Bird? Because I mean,
Well,
Isabella Bird was like an amazing. But before we get to Isabella, I do want to just touch on this one thing that you went to Wainani's cave.
right. Yeah, that was a really important thing for me to do. So, why not? Kaahumanu was born on Maui, but her mother was, I won't use the word naughty, she had an affair. She was married to the ruling chief, but she had an affair with a warrior and became impregnated with Wainani and Kaahumanu, however. So the mother ran over the hills from Wailuku to Hana, which is in a very remote side of the island, to hide because the warriors were after her to kill her. Because she had, angered her husband. And so she makes it to Hana, and she hides out in a cave in on the Hana coast. And I knew about that, and I knew that people go there to swim in the sacred waters around her birthplace. And I just very much wanted to be there to experience that. So I was lucky enough to have that opportunity. Another author friend of mine lived in Hana, and she invited me to stay in her lovely home. And she even made arrangements for me to go with the canoe club in an outrigger and to paddle in an outrigger to the birth cave in Hana. So I popped out of the outrigger and swam in the sacred waters around the cave, and then went up into the cave, and there were flowers, and people had left things for Kaahumanu. Now, tomorrow, today, as we're talking, is the 16th. Tomorrow is her birthday, and on Maui at the Kaahumanu Center, they're having a week-long celebration. She is still very revered and loved by most Hawaiians, but there is a faction that resents her for taking away the old culture. But I
That's
don't know
part of
if you,
history. That's
yeah,
part of history. That's part of history.
right.
But Isabella Bird was also recently celebrated in Estes Park, right?
Right. So my other woman, now both of these women are women in history who I felt had been overlooked. Now the Hawaiians know who Kaahumanu is, but I don't think most Westerners, even the tourists that go to Hawaii, they see her name all over. They don't know who she is or what she means and why she's important. So yeah, but Isabella Bird, now there was a woman who lived in the Victorian age in England. And most people in that time died at around 47. That was about as your lifespan. But Isabella, who had been an invalid, literally bedridden for most of her life up until the age of 40, lifted herself up from the invalid's bed, said, "I've had enough of this. You doctors have messed me up so bad. I'm, you know, don't, you know, I can't, I don't, if I can't get out of this, I don't want to live anymore." She goes on a voyage. It's supposed to be a world voyage. And this is at the age of 40. And she's a single woman, which is unusual once again.
Oh, you're a
And
spinster then. Isn't
a
that the era?
spinster, that's right. And she's not traveling in an entourage like a lot of the Victorian age women did. Lady Dixon, for instance, went, down to Patagonia with her entourage. But anyway, Isabella got to Australia and New Zealand, and at that point ran into a storm, and the storm forced her to be dry docked in the Hawaiian Islands. Well, she was only supposed to be there for 6 days while they worked on the boat. But as she was in the looking over the edge of the ship, she saw these Hawaiian boys and girls and women galloping across the quay, ribbons in their hair, so colorful, so free, so wild. And she wanted to, she said, in her heart, she went, "Oh, if I could only be with them." you know. So she gets the opportunity while she's staying there waiting for the boat to get fixed. Someone says, you know, why don't you go over to the Big Island and go see the volcano, the live volcano, which held an interest to her. So she does. She goes over there. And in order to get to the top to see the volcano, she has to ride astride. And she loved horses and riding, but she could only ride side saddle because she was a lady. And the missionary man that she was staying with says, no, you can't ride astride. You can't ride side saddle and make this ride. You're going to have to ride astride in this Mexican saddle sit up. And so she didn't want to, but she did. And in the process of doing this very strenuous ride, she learned that she didn't have this horrible chronic pain in her spine that she'd had since she was a child, because she had tumors on her spine. And the doctors had, operated on her several times and given her serious drugs, laudanum, and encouraged her to drink copious amounts of alcohol to deal with the pain. And that's what she got sick of. You know, she got sick of just being a blob in a lot of pain.
And a lot of pain. Didn't they give her laudanum and stuff like that
Yeah,
too? Didn't
right.
they? Morphine and.
Laudanum, which is opium extract, very common. In fact, she carried a bottle of it with her, in case she needed it, and she wasn't afraid to have a drink either. So she learned in the islands that she could ride pain-free, and she went wild. Instead of 6 days, she was there for 6 months. She wrote a wonderful book about her time in the islands, galloping all over the islands, but particularly on the Big Island. She went down, she rode through gorges, the raging waters, and stayed with the native peoples in their very humble abodes, and went down to the Waipio Valley, which is the Valley of the Gods. That is where the bones of chiefs are in the cliffs of these 3,000-foot mountains that surround this. This is a sacred valley. And Kamehameha was raised in that valley where he could be safe from being killed by his father. Yeah, because he was a threat to the throne. Remember, when he was born, it was prophesized that he would rule the islands. Well, that meant whoever was ruling was going to be booted out and he was going to take his place. So he was hidden away like Moses was hidden away. And he was hidden away in Waipio Valley, the sacred valley. And Isabella was lucky enough to be in that valley while the Hawaiians were still living their very gracious and beautiful old Hawaii way, where everything was shared, all fish, no one went hungry, no child was unloved, they had dancing and music and a beautiful culture, and were safe there in the valley. So many years ago, I was lucky enough to stay in Waipio Valley myself, because I knew it was a very, very special place. And I saw an article in the LA Times that there was Mr. Araki had what he called a hotel, which was really a screened-in porch for $15 a night in the Waipio Valley. And so I went down there and I stayed at Mr. Araki's hotel for 3 nights. And I was able to, in the book, I describe Isabella riding through the valley and going up to this waterfall. And I was able to do that. And it was just such a magnificent and special experience. And the year after that, they closed down all commercial overnights down in the valley. Now you can go down there, but not overnight. But there was something very magical about being there at night, listening.
And being part of her footprint. I know we've talked a lot about her adventures in Colorado, so it's nice to hear the side of her, what kind of got her, like, let's get got her on a horse in a Western way, you know?
Right.
So
And
how did, what
not
got
just
in the, go ahead.
got her on a horse, she went wild on a horse.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, she was riding like the man from Snowy
Well,
River,
it's in an interesting way, it feels like both of these ladies represent freedom, but freedom in
Right.
different forms, you know?
Right.
What got Isabella to come over to the mainland of America, of the US, and go to Colorado?
When she was like 23, she had gone on a voyage to the new world, which would be, New York and the eastern coast of our country. And her mission at that point was, her father was an evangelical priest, and she was supposed to be going around in the churches and giving an update. Well, it was all a farce, because what they were trying to do was get her to meet someone she could marry. Of course,
Oh,
she didn't
not be
want
the
to get,
spinster. Yeah.
she didn't want to get married. She didn't meet anybody she wanted to marry. But what she did see in New York and other places were Wild West characters. They had these shows and things, and she was very impressed with the colorful Wild West characters, and she heard about the beauty of the
Like
Rocky
Annie
Mountains
Oakley had to
and Wild Bill and all of that.
Hickok, yeah.
But she also was part of the English migration to the Rocky Mountains for air, for because their lungs were bad.
Okay.
So she was also there for the cure, even though she didn't really have a breathing thing. She thought it would be good for her, right? And
Is
also
that
she
what
was
Manitou Springs was really about that too? Colorado Springs and is it
the
the
hot
Broadmoor?
springs and stuff.
All of that area were part of that
Right.
too, like Healing Waters and
Right. And they had sanatoriums for people who had was for the cure, they called it. And so she had romantic ideas about Western characters, Western life, the beauty of the Rockies. And before she had left England for this tour, she had made some advance arrangements for her mountain tour. And so she then with her but I don't know how in the world she thought she was going to pull that off in the condition she was in. But after 6 months in the islands, she was strong enough, to do her 800-mile Rocky Mountain tour solo on horseback.
Wow,
And
amazing.
so, I mean, she was just a phenomenal person, and she didn't stop there. She didn't she met she eventually she had her romance in the Rocky Mountains with Rocky Mountain Jim, which they're still celebrating today. Just in the last winter, they did a 150-year celebration of her time there in the Rockies. They consider her to be the mother of the Rocky Mountain National Park, because her book, A Lady's Life in the Rockies, is written so beautifully that it has drawn tourists, millions of tourists over the years, from when it was first published and even today. And they even had a woman from Hawaii come and talk about her time in Hilo. I wasn't able to attend that particular celebration, but the year prior I did drive her 800 mile tour through
That's
the
when you did the
front.
BBC thing, right?
Right. Yes, Embrace of the Wild was selected to be I was selected to be interviewed on the BBC docu-series titled Trailblazers, and that spotlighted Isabella's time in the Rockies, and they went around to all the places that she did on her 800-mile tour.
That's
So it was a
awesome.
lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I was really proud of that. And but Isabella didn't stop there. I have to say, she went on to, and I get, and she's they still write articles about her in Japan. She went to Japan, where they'd never seen a white woman. She was in China, and she went places where, she went by herself. She would get an entourage there. But you had to have a cart, and or maybe you rode a yak. You might go. She went into the Himalayas. I mean, this woman was just unreal. Anyway, I loved her. I loved her spirit, and I felt her in her case. Her writing is a little bit flowery, I guess. It's a little dense for the modern reader. So in her story, I attempted to condense and write to sort of imitate her style, but to make it more tight, for Western readers who have a short attention span.
Yeah, no, I think both these women, I mean, like we said, they represent freedom and are trailblazers in so many ways and did what they wanted to. And Isabella didn't have any children, right, either. She
No, she was
also.
child. You know, she was a childless. She did marry eventually at 55, but of course, then it was way too late for kids, and she
She
never
was
wanted
past spinster
to.
age.
Children was not on her mind. See,
No,
she never was
that was
looking
a
for. She
both.
wasn't looking
That's.
for marriage. She wasn't looking for kids. And when her sister died, she had her closest relationship was with her sister. And she would write to her sister daily, you know, with her journals, and her sister would help edit her pieces and take them to the publisher, and was all a process for her writing world. And she had just a very intense relationship with her. And when she passed, she went back to England, and her surgeon, the sister's surgeon, had always loved Isabella, and he'd asked her to marry a couple of times before. She had said no, but this time she said yes because she had a void. She'd lost Henrietta and her, you know, one real emotional connection in life. And so she did marry. I think she was like 55, and unfortunately, that he went with her. That was the other thing. He went traveling with her. She didn't stay home with him, you know.
Ah, so that's a good match. That's a good match. I like that. So everyone, Wainani, that is out now. Both books are out. Embrace of the Wild, Wainani, A Voice from Old Hawaii is out now. And Isabella Bird, Embrace of the Wild, you can get them both. Go to what?
I have to say one thing that Jason Momoa is doing his show
Oh,
Chief of
that's right.
War is supposed to air in 2024, and I think it's going to happen. And I'm so excited because the woman who's playing Kahahumanu looks just like Wainani. I can't believe
Ah,
it.
and everyone,
It's
yeah,
just
you've also got a
hysterical.
blog on that. I'm going to link that over so you can see the link on
Yeah,
there.
look
So
for it. Chief of War.
yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. And he's from Hawaii too, so
Yeah.
that's a good connection there. So I was saying, Linda's got a blog that she wrote about Queen Kahomanu,
Wainani. Just say
Kahomanu,
Wani.
Kahomanu. Wainani, right? So I'm going to link to that. Also, the blog she wrote about Jason Momoa. I think she just wanted to write about Jason Momoa. I'm just saying. I'm,
I know, I
ah, had
know.
to do that. I had to
He's
do that.
a
He is. But all the links are in the show notes. And of course, keep up with Linda. Go to lostangeladventures.com and get her books. Go on an adventure. And she's always inspiring us to get out there and live life. So thanks so much as always. It's such a fun time, Linda.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio's Lost Angel Travel Adventure Show with Linda Ballou, travel writer and author. Keep up with her at lindabalooauthor.com and lostangeladventures.com. You can also keep up with Big Blend Radio at bigblendradio.com. Now, happy traveling!